This is the Criminal Law Podcast on the topic of rape, and this is probably the most controversial offense that we will look at in the class, and certainly in the last 5 to 10 years, the level of controversy over it has only increased, much of it relating to the issue of consent. Now, what we're not concerned with are issues relating to college campuses and educational institutions and how they have chosen to define it. But here the focus is on the criminal law and the common law elements that are not completely carried over to current statutes, but does have an effect on it. And the common law elements of the offense are the use of force or a threat of force, and that is an objective standard. So would a reasonable person consider that there was a threat of force, assuming there's no actual force used? And then a second element was against the will. This was separate from the force or threat of force that required proof that the act was against the will of the victim. This is uncommon in other common law offenses, but here, does this require resistance? Well, never explicitly, but the government did bear the burden of showing that it was against the will and without consent. That was that's a third element of the offense and a separate element. So force or threat of force against the will without the victim's consent, and then the actus reus of the offense. And this is a general intent offense. It is not a specific intent offense. So just the general intent to engage in the conduct. Now, states have updated their laws in this area, some more than others. Michigan was, in fact, a leader in this area and created the crime of criminal sexual conduct that has different degrees. So the common law rape required proof of penetration, sexual intercourse, whereas now the statutes have different levels, rape involving sexual intercourse or unlawful contact or touching. And that is often a lower degree offense. So, for example, the Wisconsin statute has 3 degrees of the offense. One issue that certainly has come up is the definition of both of consent and the amount of force that is required. The In Re DB case looked at the issue of how much is required, how much force beyond what is involved in the sexual contact or sexual intercourse itself. And in that case, in the DB case, the court said that the use of force requires something more than the conduct that is involved in the sexual touching or intercourse itself, that it has the connotation, the court said, of to defeat, overcoming the victim. So something more is necessary. How much more? Well, there is, of course, no clear definition of that, but there has to be at least some proof of force that goes beyond the actus reus of the offense. What is required for consent? Well, this is an issue that is now quite controversial as to how is consent proven. If consent is an element of the offense, then the government must show, the prosecution must show, that the victim, the contact or the touching took place without the victim's consent. Or if it is not an element, the lack of consent is not an element, then it is a defense to the charge. Now, the burden could be on the defendant to show actual consent. The issue being, what is consent? Well, the Wisconsin statute, again, using that as an example, says that consent means words or overt actions. So notice that conduct can signal intent. The Wisconsin statute also requires informed consent, indicating a freely given agreement. The New Jersey case, in the interest of MTS, says that there must be an affirmative and freely given permission, but the court in that case also says that permission can be inferred from the acts. And so this is where the real ambiguity in this area comes in as to how to establish consent. And of course, the more difficult cases here are not the stranger cases. Those are really a matter of forensics in most instances, but instead between people who know one another, they've had some type of personal relationship, a friendship, or perhaps even more than that. And of course, the states have gotten rid of the marital exemption so that just being married is not a defense to a rape charge, but this is an area in which communication is not often just by words. And the Flynn case also talks about the withdrawal of consent, that consent can be given, but then withdrawn, and the question is whether the sexual contact or intercourse continued with the use of force through compulsion, as the court said there, so that consent can be given and then withdrawn. But of course, that presents its own evidentiary issues in trying to establish how was it withdrawn, was it communicated, was the contact terminated. There is also in this area, too, the issue of fraud, and the common law distinguished between fraud in the fact and fraud in the inducement. Fraud in the fact is when a defendant says that there will be a touching or a contact and says that it will be of one type, but in fact it is of another type that constitutes criminal sexual conduct, whether sexual contact or sexual intercourse. So it's saying that there will be one thing and in fact it is another. This comes up often in the cases involving doctors, medical practitioners. There is then fraud in the inducement, in which the defendant makes misrepresentations to the victims, but that there is consent to the act. And so the question is whether that fraud rises to the level of a crime. And under the common law, fraud in the inducement did not constitute rape or criminal sexual conduct. The case we looked at, FAM, is under a California statute that expands in this area, says that when the victim is unconscious of the nature of the act because the perpetrator fraudulently represented that the touching served a professional purpose. Well, what is unconscious? The court there said it's not that you are physically unconscious, but that you are unaware of the characteristics of the act. So it's not so much unconsciousness as unawareness, and that the fraud is what? It's not just verbal statements, but whether the defendant fraudulently represented the nature of the actions. And so leading a victim to believe it was going to be one type of action when in fact it was another. In FAM, this was a chiropractor who, of course, was going to be touching the victims, the patients, but in fact, because of the sexual nature, they were unaware of that and also unconscious, at least under the definition in the statute. There is also the what's commonly known as the crime of statutory rape. That is sexual relations with a victim who is under the age of consent. And what is important to remember, and this is the State versus Martinez case, in the vast majority of the states, that the age of the victim, there is no intent required for that. It is the general intent to engage in the conduct, but that element of the offense is strict liability. Even if there is a reasonable mistake about the age of the victim, that is not a defense to the crime, that there is no defense that I thought this person was, if the age of consent is 16, I thought the person was 16 or whatever the age is, that any mistake along those lines is not a defense to a charge of criminal sexual conduct or statutory rape when it involves a victim under the age designated by the legislature. One final point to touch on, although this is not a great concern for our class, more for the evidence class that you may or may not take, but there are now the rape shield laws that prevent a defendant from introducing evidence of a victim's reputation to try to establish in some way consent or something like that. Now, if there are specific instances of the involvement of the defendant and the victim, that can be introduced, but general evidence about the victim's past, sexual history, anything like that, are off limits. And also there has been a push in this area to allow the prosecution to introduce evidence of other offenses of sexual assault by the defendant, even though they didn't involve the victim. This would be what's known in the evidence area as propensity evidence.